Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It is the Legacy Fans, it is the Anfield Wrap, it is Neil Atkinson, and I've got Ian Ryan, Harry Pryor and Rob Gutman in order to go through, well, the current state of play in a number of different senses. We will be talking in a few minutes about Leeds 1, Liverpool 1. Either side of that will bookend the conversation with the, frankly, much bigger deal and the thing that actually throws Leeds 1, Liverpool 1. Gives it a massive question mark as to what its meaningfulness will be going into next season. We will start, Ian, I'll come over to you first. There is, the thing that I thought was difficult last night was the fact that everyone was more interested in the talking than they were interested in the football, pre-match and post-match, manager and captain, and what was said by the punditry class within there as well, felt as though, and even Patrick Bamford, frankly, felt as though it had as much relevance for the wider sort of football picture as the game itself. And that isn't good, and it especially isn't good because it's a manager and a captain left to front up something that is, at one level, absolutely nothing to do with them.
Yeah, it was easy to forget, Neil. There was a game taking place last night. I think it must be the first time in a long time. I didn't check the team news until right before kickoff because you're absorbed by everything else that's going on. And I think I felt so sorry for the manager to be put in that position. And I think if you're going to make decisions that are that impactful and impact on people's lives in such a big way, and we know football for many is everything, if you're going to do that, have the bollocks to come out and talk us through it. Don't put the manager in a situation where he's got to front it and it's really awkward for him, because you know deep down what Jurgen Klopp thinks. You know deep down what he believes, because he knows right from wrong. He knows right from wrong, as does James Milner. And yet he's in a situation where he's got to fudge it a little bit because they're his employers. And I think he probably did as well as he could, given the circumstances. And as for James Milner, well, you know what James Milner's all about. He wasn't going to sugarcoat it. He came on straight away and said, listen, it's not for me. I don't like it. And, you know, he's 35 years of age and he's probably not worried about what the future holds because he knows he's got maybe a year or two left at the very top. So maybe it's different for him in terms of he can give those messages out. But I just came away from it thinking, I felt sorry for them both, that they should be put in a situation by FSG where they've got to explain decisions that they've had absolutely no involvement in. And I was thinking during the day, as this is all breaking and I'm listening to some of the stuff that Rob was on, and I'm thinking, I wonder whether the manager and the players had any idea, because you're thinking, can you keep something like that from them? And then it becomes absolutely kind of obvious to us all when Klopp says, well, I knew nothing about it. I wasn't involved in those conversations. And that's absolutely damning, to be honest. And as I say, I think the manager and the vice captain on the night, James Milner, did as well as he could in the circumstances.
One of the aspects of the circumstances where they end up, Harriet, is with people protesting onto the ground when they meet it. The manager references the walk through the city. There's the knowledge that the flags have come down off the cop. And there's the, within that, there's the real sort of question as to what the club actually is and who it is at those key moments. And it seemed to me as though there was a sense of being genuinely sort of hurt from the manager. The captain didn't really speak about this, but from the manager around the idea of the loss of that support and what it would mean to them. And I'm always pleased when he's emotionally honest in that, you know, I completely agree with the decision to take the flags down. I think it's quite a powerful statement. And it means that, for instance, that question can be asked. But it's the fact that, again, it has to come back to the manager. And he's the one who knows that when they turn up at Anfield on Saturday, he'll have a massive visual symbol of what's gone on, that he's got to process on top of literally the football match.
Yeah, it's totally sort of unfair on him that he's the one that's having to come out and front the decisions and be made to explain them when he's had absolutely nothing to do with them behind the scene. And I mean, ultimately, it comes down to the fact that it is going to affect the football players. There's no way that they weren't sort of online yesterday and reading all the conversations that were going on. And it does seem unfair. And like Klopp said, it's nothing to do with the players. All we've done wrong is lose a few football matches here and there. But ultimately, how else do the fans show their sort of disgust with it all and how upset they are with it all, other than doing things like protesting outside the stands and taking the banners down and things like that? There's no other really outlet for us to do that. And it's bad that it does affect the players. And last night, I think, you know, everyone felt a bit dead during the match. Like, we don't know what it means now, whether the result last night has any impact moving forward whatsoever. I think it is really sad. And I did feel bad for Klopp. And you could tell last night at the beginning of the match and at the end of the match, he didn't want to be there. He didn't want to answer these questions. Ultimately, because like the rest of us, he doesn't really have the answers at the moment. I think if he was able to come and say, this is the rationale behind it, this is why they're doing it, you know, I kind of get from this aspect where they're coming from. And, you know, he himself said he's not pleased with UEFA, and we can't in any of this paint UEFA as the good party in this, because we know that's not the case. But he didn't have any of the answers. He didn't know what to say, just like the rest of us. He could have asked any of us those questions and we would have said the exact same thing as him. I think it feels sad because, maybe unlike Man City, who made me expect this of their owners and stuff, we kind of thought to an extent that maybe they got more of what the club was about, more of what the city was about, and they clearly don't. And I think that's why it feels like such a sort of stab in the heart for all of us, because it's just so against what everything our club stands for and the city stands for.
It's the vacuum, Rob, that by now, by this stage, you know, Liverpool's statement on their website on Sunday night quoted the Manchester United co-chairman. I think he is nothing to do with anyone from Liverpool. No one from the club has spoken or anything like that. We'll get more into the ins and outs of it later on. But what that vacuum does is it means that there'll be people who've got to answer the questions who do not have the answers and cannot communicate whatever the message is. As Harriet says there, I don't think anyone, including the legacy fans, it's fair to say, are champions of UEFA, or for that matter, the Premier League, in amongst all of this. Nobody thinks that UEFA's decisions and the Premier League's decisions are motivated by decency and the good of the game. But the absolute vacuum and the nature of the very limited communication that there's been so far, until Perez last night was doing an interview till 1 a.m. that was getting madder and madder every time he opened his mouth, means that you're left with no sense of what the purpose of this is. And it's left to football people to have to try to speak in public about this, and it allows other people to claim a great deal of moral high ground.
Yeah, it was unedifying to watch Klopp so conflicted, so not sure what position he was actually meant to take, or how he actually felt about himself. Let's be clear about one thing, which I don't think anyone wants to say out loud, but so many parties here don't come to this with clean hands, and those include footballers and managers, because they earn absurd amounts of money. And unless they were going to come out and say, well, I don't want to take your absurd amounts of money and wages when you start your new thing, then they're sort of part of the problem. They just are, and they know it, and it doesn't make them criminals or morally bankrupt to be part of that problem, because there's a lot of parties in this who are part of a wider problem, arguably. So, but I did feel for Klopp, because if they're all culpable in some way or another, because they're all on the gravy train, he may have said, well, why am I the schmuck who's put in front of a camera while you're all doing your bits? And that felt, you know, from a human point of view, and I think that's the thrust of your question, that felt unfair and harsh. I think Klopp felt, I sensed that he'd obviously seen what had played out mainly on television, with Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher expressing themselves vociferously, and fans, as you said, fans on the street, fans on TV. And so it felt, perhaps like other people, that there are nuances to this. There are things that clearly don't sit right. There are things that may be worth discussing. And although Gary, when he went cut back to the studio after the Klopp interview yesterday, Gary Neville went, well, there's Klopp. He's throwing his own owners under a bus. There you go. I thought, he didn't quite throw them under a bus, did he? There was nuance to what he said there. He pointed a finger at UEFA. He sort of said in so was, hey, it's not, I wouldn't have chosen this route, but there's complexity here and there's things that need to happen. I think what he tried to do is push the focus onto the fact that, and this is a key question, what is, you said at the start of this, you posited this, Neil, what is the entity of LFC? Is it the business or is it something more ephemeral or spiritual even? And I think he wanted to push it in that direction, say, hey, you know, let's think about that before we point fingers.
I think he's doing that, Rob. I think the other thing that doesn't help is, over the course of the evening, is he either hears or hears about what's coming out of Neville's mouth, or has heard what's come out of Neville's mouth. And I think, firstly, I think that gives him the opportunity to retreat to a little bit of safe ground, if I'm absolutely honest. But I think also, secondly, he does genuinely want to stick up for the football club on which he's had this journey. And, you know, I feel as though the, not least because Liverpool were playing last night, so we do need to bear that in mind, but the cant from the owner of Salford City Football Club wasn't necessarily best placed at that moment in order to be able to put the point over, because Klopp will want to be defensive, not just of Liverpool's corporate structure, but also he'll view himself as wanting to be defensive of his team, of his players, and to an extent of you and I.
Yeah, yeah, and Gary Neville's very much taken a position where he's forcing polarisation as well. And I think a lot of people are, and I don't think he's alone in that. I mean, you're right, he's compromised. But that's my point.
Yeah, it's fine, we're all compromised. I'm compromised, Rob. Yeah. We're all compromised.
I've listened to the Excel, I'll plug it for you, the excellent chat you do with Rory about this. And, you know, and I think, you know, keeps patting people on their own backs. You know, I made this point in the show I did yesterday with Jay and Damien and Gareth and others, and Kathy, I think it was, and that there were many, the stable door is open, I think is the term Rory used. There's been many times to check this. The Champions League was a major, major departure from what had been before. I think it was Gareth who said, you know, the thought that we may never win the European Cup again if this goes through, that's heartbreaking. I thought, we haven't won the European Cup since 1984, if you really want to think about it. We haven't. We may win Europe's Premier Trophy again. We will, you know, it hasn't quite got the same ring to it. We won Europe's Premier Trophy 7 times in one of 4 stadiums in Europe. Routinely, we won it 7 times. But we're going to drill down this, I know, but there's questions of degree everywhere here. And I think everyone's rushing to the extremes of them. I suppose that's natural because it's come as a bit of a surprise, if we're all honest.
It's come as a surprise, and I think that people, there is a direction of travel, Ian, but the nature of it, the timing of it, and how whole hog they've gone, as I say, up to and including Perez last night, saying all sorts of mad stuff on Spanish TV, as though he was a dog that had batteries put in and was just going to bark until the batteries went out. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I thought I was up late, but Florentino Perez puts a stint in. There is within all of that, what's strange for me is that I feel as though the football club had spent a lot of time going out of its way. And it's important in amongst all of this to remember the football club is a lot of different entities, as Klopp's tried to say, as Rob's tried to say, but also literally, you know, in the corporate structure between Liverpool, London and Boston, we've known in the past that there's separations there. But it feels as though the football club's put a lot of work in around community sort of based stuff, around building trust over a long period of time. They haven't always got everything right. We've talked about that. We know that they haven't always got everything right, but it's felt as though there's been a desire there. This doesn't just, and the vacuum that they've allowed to be created doesn't just leave them in a position where it's their actions that they'll be judged on, but also the complete lack of leadership at a key moment and what they've done to arguably Liverpool's most beloved manager since, let's say, Bob Paisley at the very least. Kenny Dalglish, sorry, since Kenny Dalglish, Liverpool's most beloved manager since Kenny Dalglish, that they've just hung him out to dry there. And that trust and that lack of leadership will take years, if not decades, really to address.
I think you've kind of pitched that right, Neil, to be honest. So regardless how this plays out now, a line's been crossed for me. And I think you wouldn't say you knew this was coming, but you maybe sensed something was coming. And I've always people who would have listened to me on these shows will probably know I've been a little bit of a skeptic when it comes to the owners. They've got some things right, as you've mentioned, and they've got some things wrong. And the things they got wrong always concern me, because it always felt like they were pushing the boundaries a little bit. How far can we push it? How far can we push this set of fans? What can we get away with? And the reason I felt like that is because the mistakes that they made were the most easily avoidable mistakes you could make. It's been said on other shows, but it was things like, you know, the ticket and stuff, the furlough and the trademark and stuff that you could easily avoid by picking up the phone to multiple people, whether it be Spying Lads, Anfield Rap, Spirit of Shankly. Very, very easy stuff to avoid. And yet they still did it. And that worried me, because it was like, well, why would you do it? Because you know what's going to happen. And it was almost like, what can we get away with? How far can we push these? So it always felt like something might be in the post a little bit. And I think Carragher said it last night, you know, if they were to be the reason that the manager left the football club, and it looks like, you know, that's not even part of his thinking, but if it was to transpire, if it was to kind of suddenly gather legs and go in different directions, and Klopp did see it as a position that he couldn't continue in, they would be driven out of town. They wouldn't last 5 minutes. Because don't get me wrong, there are people who really like the ownership group, or have done, and I can understand why, to a point. They've always left me wanting a little bit more, of them being honest. But make no mistake about it, Jürgen Klopp is the reason why we've seen the success that we've seen. He is the main man. He is this powerful figure that we've all bought into since he walked through the door in 2015. He's the figurehead. He's what matters. So if he was to suddenly decide this wasn't for him, then fucking hell, there's a backlash on its way. You better believe that. And I think, you know, it'd be interesting to see what Klopp's thinking this morning. I haven't been through that situation, because he talks about the owners and the good people and all that, and he's got a good working relationship with them. But he can't have been impressed with that situation last night, where they've put him in a scenario where, what's he going to do? What can he do? And he, you know, he got himself into maybe one or two knots when he started talking about the flags coming down and stuff. And, you know, if I do disagree with the manager on anything, it probably is that, because at some point you've got to make a stand. And fans decided that would be the way where we'd show a bit of protest, in terms of, we don't agree with the decision. And I think that's right, by the way. And I can see what the manager's trying to say, and it's not the team and it's not him, but you've got to do something. And what else can you do at the minute? We can't be there. We can't voice our concerns by being in the ground and doing it in maybe a traditional sense. So you've got to do what you can. So I understand the decision to remove the flags from the ground ahead of the Newcastle game. And I know it might not please the manager, but as I say, you've got to do something. It feels like you've got to do something, even if it's only something small. And you hope it doesn't impact on the team, because you want to make sure the team wins. And you wonder what effect it had on them last night, because, I mean, I know we'll come on to the game, whilst they put in a really, really good performance first half, you do think, well, actually, has it had an impact on them? It can't have been great preparation going into a game that they had to win, knowing all this is going around them. It can't have been great.
The strange thing about this, just from the point of view of the fact that you left with a manager and a captain after the match, Harriet, having to be the people who fronted up there and then, is I didn't half think the rich fellas either had hired or would hire a PR firm. I didn't half think the fellas who've decided that they've got a way to sort out all of European football would have had a clever communication strategy that was in place that told the story of, for instance, all the issues and questions around the fact that you should not have a regulator run a competition and profit from that competition at the same time. This stuff is not difficult. UEFA is not a necessarily a good thing. You're left in this position where not only is this actually a question around values, but it becomes one around competence, when it feels as though James Milner and Jurgen Klopp are the people who speak for Liverpool Football Club, when it's Liverpool Football Club's owners who are trying to change the very fabric of football, and they simply can't be bothered.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It does feel like they just sort of got around a table and thought, should we announce it tonight? Okay, let's announce it tonight and see what happens. They got nothing else in place after that. No, like you said, we just had someone coming on last night and talking to us till 1 a.m. and seeing random things on Twitter here and there. It just feels like there was no strategy in place to how to deal with the questions. It was just a statement that I thought was really sort of half-assed. It didn't really answer anything that we as fans really wanted to know. And like you said, it just sort of had, it touched on sort of nuances, but it didn't really go any further. I mean, mean, for one example, the women's football thing, I mean, it just said, you know, the women's teams will follow shortly after. I mean, what does that even mean? Because the clubs that have
flashed in.
Yeah, the clubs that have gone into this from the men's perspective aren't the same teams that are, you know, in the Champions League and are as good from the women's perspective. So, you know, I think I read that they've got one Champions League between them, all of those 12 teams that will be going into it. It just makes no sense. There was no sort of nuanced follow-up. And I mean, again, not to go back to that, but it just seems like the women's team and the game has just been left to the side yet again, which is frustrating. But it just, the lack of communication is actually astounding, to the point that everyone turned on last night not having a clue how Klopp was going to react, how much he knew about it, how much Milner knew about it, whether the fans, you know, whether the players even had been told anything beforehand. I mean, I kind of presume that Klopp would have known a lot more than he already did, and he kind of found out about it in the same way as us. That is astounding. And what other company, industry scenario would you have the fact that just no stakeholder group groups consulted in this one decision, this huge decision that's going to have impact on every single person's career, and they're not even told beforehand before it goes to the public. And it's crazy, because yes, it wasn't just on the sports channels, it wasn't just the sort of sports fans that were talking about it, it was all over the news, it was absolutely everywhere. There was no escaping it. There's no way that the players last night could have possibly escaped that, and to think that that's not going to have a knock-on effect on how they play and the mentality going into the game is just ridiculous, because it's obviously going to, you know, they're people as well, they're going to be impacted by what's going on in the world and what people are saying about the team and their club ultimately.
Okay, we will get into the game itself. And all of that said, Rob, I don't know, I think Liverpool start well. You know, we can talk about whether or not where the impact was, the idea of Leeds wearing the T-shirts. But in, I would say, all of the fundamentals of football for the first 55 minutes, Liverpool play ever so well, apart from around the penalty area. And I will come back to that in a minute. But the main thing I thought... was I was impressed with Liverpool's focus, with the certainty, with the shape and with the structure. The magic, I think, bar one phenomenal moment, was missing, but they had everything else.
Yeah, you could see how high the press was from the word go. And I know Mane's taken flak recently and he still doesn't look anywhere near his top level. But he didn't half work hard that first half. He was flying into everything. And, you know, we did look like ourselves. We got our goal. We weren't making chance after chance, it has to be said. I suppose because we don't snatch it, I mean, I rewatched some of the highlights this morning. I've forgotten how good that final chance is for Oxlade-Chamberlain. It'd have been a lovely thing to be talking about that first half, the way we talked about the Villa first half the other day, and when it wasn't so great second half, but what a great first half, and we won it, hooray for everything. It all unfortunately feels a little futile because of how wretched the second half was, a bit strong, but just how flat the second half was from our point of view. And I don't think any of the level of the performance, the good or the bad, had anything really to do with the circumstances coming into the game, apart from the fact that maybe they were a little bit more fired up at the beginning, arguably. But I think they were fired like that against Madrid, and I think Klopp's trying to get them back into that mindset. Maybe he was harnessing what was going on. Maybe he was trying to get them angry. But you're right, it was a good first half performance.
They were able to be first to everything. Fabinho plays ahead of Phillips, and it meant that there was a little bit of a Fabinho-shaped hole in the midfield. More in the second half again, and we'll come on to talk about the weaknesses in a second. But there was this genuine sort of front-footedness. I felt like every single time Alcantara picked the ball up, he was looking to pass forward, he was looking to make something happen. I thought the movement was really bright from all parties, and there was greater fluidity in the absence of Salah. There was greater fluidity between the front three, I felt, where Salah didn't just do what he does, which is occupy the position that he's so good in. Instead, it seemed like everybody in that front three was popping up absolutely everywhere. It felt like the running from the fullbacks was present. They were where they were meant to be. It felt like Liverpool were on the front foot throughout, and Milner's direct run as well, with and without the ball, was making a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. I think first half, you couldn't really have too many complaints other than the fact they didn't put the ball in the net enough, because it was pretty much everything you wanted to see in terms of, it was intense. I agree with the movements. I thought they'd changed really well as a front three. I was still surprised with the Salah decision, because I did the team talk on the weekend, and you know, we were debating what he might go with. And for me, you know, Salah was nailed on. And I know he's played a lot of football this season, but just because of the numbers he's posting, he's the only one who's really hit his true levels in terms of numbers, Jota maybe as well. But certainly in Mane and Firmino, it's two lads who have misfired quite a lot this season. Pleased for Mane to get his goal, because it feels like he's needed that for a long time. I thought Trent was outstanding. First off, I thought he was brilliant. I mean, you see it for the goal. It's a really nice move. I think it's Thiago who kind of pings it into Jota. It's a great ball by Jota. But the movement from Trent, and it looks like he's done something really, really simple there. But there's so many other things that would have been going through his mind. He could have tried to go round the keeper and finish it himself, but he puts it on a plate for Mane. So yeah, Neil, it was a good first half. I agree with the James Milner shout. I think he does tire second half, and I think, I'm sure we'll come on to it, maybe the manager could have done something a little bit quicker with the subs, because it felt like Leeds got on top of his second half. But Milner first half, he was everything you want him to be. He was tenacious, he was great in the tackle, he was winning things back, he was driving us forward. So really good 45 from James Milner, but you sense maybe it might fall off a cliff a little bit second half, or you could certainly see it was going that way, and that's what transpired.
Liverpool, I think, Harriet, really, really rattle Leeds. There's a number of times Leeds give it away very cheaply. I'd say throughout the whole of the match, but in that first 45 minutes, they're giving it out cheaply, they're knocking it into touch. A lot of what Leeds get praised for, Liverpool do to them really, really well in that first 45.
Yeah, definitely. I thought that they didn't really give them a chance to be, you know, Leeds play such an attacking style of football, and they didn't really give them a chance to sort of break away as much. I mean, most of it was played, really attacking football from Liverpool. And I thought as well, we just put the pressure on a lot in the first half. We weren't giving them much time on the ball. Whenever they did get the ball, we worked really hard to win it back. I thought Mane especially was really sort of pressing high and pushing on and in the first half. And it was really good to see. And then obviously the goal came from that. It was frustrating then in the second half to see that we couldn't sort of build on that and take advantage of the chances that we did have, because I thought from when the second half started, I thought it looked like Leeds were going to get a goal back, and ultimately obviously they did, and that is what happened. And I think, yeah, if we could have, you know, in that first half taken just one more chance and gone 2-0 up, then it would have been the game nailed on. Ultimately, obviously that didn't happen, but there was a lot of positives. I mean, there was a lot of players that looked like they were finding their form again. I think, you know, like you've already said, we did miss Fabinho in the midfield. It did look like there was a bit of a hole, and I think that's why in the second half we sort of lost control of the midfield a little bit. But there was a lot of good things to take away from that. I just wish that all the players were finding their form and consistency at the same time, and it didn't seem to be one player in one match and then another in the next. It would just be nice if they were all firing on all cylinders throughout 90 minutes of the game. But it was a good first half, definitely.
The chances, Harriet, for me, what was frustrating wasn't just the chances that they were missing. It was the chances to create chances. It was the number of times Liverpool got themselves in a position where they were around the Leeds United area with, I'm going to say, strength in numbers. I don't mean 4-on-2, but I mean 4v5 or 4v4 or something like that, where Liverpool had the ball under control 20, 25 yards from the Leeds United goal and had a really strong numerical presence. Mm-hmm. And from there did not create a decent opportunity. Sometimes a shot would come off late, sometimes the ball would be rolled back, sometimes it would end up being a cross that was pumped into the penalty area. But that was what was so frustrating watching it for me, was they repeatedly, in both halves, second half much more on the counter, but they repeatedly got around the Leeds United box, forced errors, won the ball back, pressed brilliantly, and then just got it badly wrong.
Yeah, but we've seen that quite a lot of times this season. I think that's a consequence of them just losing their confidence around the box. And I think there was quite a few times, like you said, we could have attempted a shot maybe a little bit earlier or a shot at all, and they just passed it sideways or they looked backwards and then the chance was gone because enough Leeds players had got back and we didn't have the opportunity to then create something of it. So, yeah, it was frustrating. I think, you know, obviously we know that the Oxlade-Chamberlain chance was missed and they're kind of the obvious things. But like you said, it is the times when we could have really pushed forward and we had strength in numbers and then they just didn't sort of go for it and they didn't keep pushing forward. It looked like they just kept pushing forward until they got to the penalty area of the box, and then they just would turn around and sort of be like, okay, no, not this time, we'll try again. And I think that is what's annoying, because yeah, ultimately we know we needed that second goal, and it didn't come off. And I think there was a lot of wasted chances, both obvious and both the ones that maybe, yeah, they just didn't take or attempt to take.
This is, for me, Ian, this is nothing new, and what I mean is not just this season. I actually think you can track this across two or three seasons, and I might try and do so. It's a strange thing to ultimately see a side that looked as though it was absolutely full of attacking and counter-attacking majesty still be the same footballers, not have suffered any obvious physical decline. Yes, they're a couple of years older, but it's not like they're suddenly 38 or anything like that. You know, it's not as though it's some sort of marked difference in amongst it. To see the same footballers, broadly speaking, get into the very similar positions, and I don't believe they're being better defended. They're still, at times, had a man over. Still at times, Leeds are throwing the body on the line. Still at times, it's 3v4. That's not good defending. This is just good crisis defending from Leeds. Are we saying that crisis defending's got better against Liverpool? I just don't think so. I think what we're seeing is a lot of players just getting into the habit and not being able to get out of the habit of making bad choices around the box.
I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, the incident that sums it up for me is the one in the second half where Andy Robertson's absolutely full pelt. And he's got at least two options, two very good options, and he just completely makes a hash of it. And, you know, Andy Robertson's a fantastic footballer, and he's provided Liverpool and Liverpool's forwards with plenty of assists over the last two or three seasons. He just gets that one really wrong. But I think there's been a lot of that. And I think when you think about, you know, someone like Firmino and Mane, I think now you have seen it where it's in their heads a little bit. And it just frustrates me, Neil, because you could even say this about Salah at times. The way they're striking the ball, it's very scruffy at times. The forwards are making it really difficult, but it doesn't look like it's that difficult. You know, Firmino has one very, very early on where he gets put through, and I'm not saying it's an easy chance, but there's an option or there's a possibility of lifting it over the keeper's head. Doesn't even come close. He completely skews it, and it just goes out for a goal kick. But there's others across other games where it just looks really, really scruffy. I know that's really simplistic to say, but there's been a lot of that. And I think, you know, Mohamed Salah, you have to always give him credit because he's the one who seems to be so focused. And yes, he does miss chances. The Real Madrid game, obviously case in point, but he's still able to post those numbers when he's won. What's he on? 28 goals. Mm. So he doesn't seem to let it affect him. And I think that's one of the kind of true, kind of brilliant parts of Mo Salah's game is that he's so kind of focused. He doesn't let the odd miss affect him. He wouldn't think twice about not putting himself in that position again because he might miss. Doesn't care. He'll put himself in that position again. You know, you see it for the Villa game where he has that one, but he probably should score. The goalie does okay. But Mo Salah wants to be in those positions all the time. And you just wonder whether one or two maybe are taking, at times, the easy option because they'd rather not be in the position to miss. But I just think as well, it's probably in one or two players' heads now, and you know they are getting things wrong. You know, the Chamberlain one, sort of a little bit of chatter last night online. You know, people were saying, well, he's got to score that, and I actually think he should. And I know he hasn't played very often, and I think Phil Blood made the point where he's played 5 minutes in about 5 weeks. I get that, and if you're Oxlade Chamberlain, it's probably a fair thing to say. But when that comes to you, he just can't sort his feet out, and he just makes an absolute hash of it. And I think a player of his ability, regardless of whether he's been playing or not, it's not that difficult to put that either side of the keeper, and we don't make it count. And it does feel like we're being punished now because we are letting in one or two where, you know, you wouldn't have seen us do that maybe with a Van Dijk or a Gomez or a Matip. And the goal last night massively frustrated me because it's such poor defending. And Firmino doesn't do enough, Kabak doesn't do enough, and the guy's just knocking it in from 6 yards. And it's a really, really poor goal, but it's a goal that you sensed, you sniffed it, you knew it was coming because Leeds were on top. And again, I was a little bit frustrated that maybe we didn't react a bit sooner. The manager might say, listen, there wasn't loads and loads of options. I think he would have liked to have had a Curtis Jones available in the last couple of games just to give him a little bit of something different. We've not had that. I think he's lost a little bit of confidence in Naby Keita. You can understand why. His body keeps letting him down. When he brings him in against Madrid, it doesn't go well for him. It was a frustrating way to end a football match where Liverpool just looked in absolute control. And if it had been 2 or 3 at half time, it wouldn't have flattered them. And I think, you know, Leeds are a funny side because they can really put teams to the sword. We've seen them do it countless times, but they are a team that could be on the end of some real high ends as well because they do leave space, they do leave gaps. As good as Phillips is, for instance, in the middle of the park, he does vacate space at times. And it's just frustrating to come away from a game where you could have really have punished them first half, but we're sitting here again having dropped 2 points.
We're sitting here having dropped those points, Rob. The extent to which Leeds do come on strong second 45, and Liverpool to me did look as though they missed somebody in the middle of the park with the stature of Fabinho or Henderson. I think that's fair to say. But all of that said, you know, we've watched a lot of football matches in our time where the better side should get in ahead, does, possibly should have made it more, hasn't, has to withstand a storm, and then goes and counters at some point during the second half and away from home and makes it 2-0. At which point, the legs are cut from the side that have been pushing and pushing. They've done their very, very best. all brave stuff, lads. But it's hard lines. It's the way it goes. And anyway, they were better than your first half. And that should have been the football match we were watching, even without the fans in. I thought that was the football match that we were sort of watching. But they just keep getting the counter run wrong. And they just keep getting the counter run wrong. And they just keep getting the counter run wrong. Ian's, you know, given one example there before with Robertson through to Jota, or not through to Jota more accurately. But there was five or six others at 1-0. When Liverpool aren't playing as well as they were first half, but they're staying alive and they're meant to be fresh on the break, they're meant to be ready for it, and it just doesn't come, and it was remarkably frustrating to watch.
Yeah, I mean, on the counter, I was screaming at the TV screen several times as we're not throwing enough forward. We used to counter it at our best, like the Red Arrows, you know, like an absolute squadron flying forward, so that you just outnumber people. I didn't think we were doing that on the counter. I do think, in terms of how fate can work in a football match, is that we needed the second goal in that game to have been scored before the 70th minute. I think if it had been ours, the game would have been over. I think if they'd scored it before the 70th minute, we'd have woken up again out of our torpor, and we would have come again and probably won it. We might have rattled in another couple, in my opinion. I don't know. But I feel at the time they scored, you knew the second they scored that we'd go up the other end of the pitch and start to make chances again. You knew that would happen, but you looked at the clock and you went, what's there, only 5 minutes left?
Yeah.
Or whatever it was. If they'd scored, if Alisson hadn't done his job so marvellously, and one of the, I mean, I hate to say it, but that is what football is. It's a game of fine margins. Had he fluffed his lines and we conceded before 70, I think we might have had a better chance of winning it. Mad, but true.
No, it's, I think that is mad. I know exactly what you mean. It's the ebb and flow of the game. And that, you know, I've described one ebb and flow there. You've described another ebb and flow. But Liverpool get the ebb and flow that they get. And I think that, you know, in the middle of the park, I did feel as though footballers were toiling. You know, Ian said before about the manager and who he does or doesn't have faith in, Rob, but there was time there to change it. You know, I didn't think that any of the starting midfield three looked anywhere near as fresh as you'd like on 75, and we know that this is what Leeds do. They ratchet and ratchet and ratchet up that sort of intensity and look to find a way through. I was surprised he didn't do something in there a little bit earlier.
Yeah, so was I. I had that sort of feeling. I thought, is he... Klopp gets... Some managers are prone to this, and I think it's arguable it's a good thing or bad thing, and Brendan was as well, where they think, it's a tight game, but I like how we've played in this football match on the whole, and there's an alchemy there I do not... Or a balance there I don't want to unhinge. And it causes them to hesitate. Maybe... And when it doesn't work out, it looks like fatal hesitation. I don't know, you know, as you said.
That's a really fair point, Rob. I mean, you know, not making a sub is the same as making a sub, if you sort of see what I mean. You're making a decision, and your decision is not to do something. And that decision, you know, Liverpool were three more minutes away from it being the right one not to do something. The thing for me, though, was I was just watching legs. You know, I was watching Thiago Milner and Wijnaldum all, to me, just looked really, really leggy, and that was only going one way.
I felt there was a 4-2-3-1 move. I felt... But because I thought I actually really enjoyed Jota's performance. I know he should have scored a header, and he nearly gets away a couple of shots, which would look like vintage Jota goals, one in the first half where he gets blocked. But I liked his direct running. In some ways, because all of his other performances have been... we have not been able to watch what he's done, apart from we've just noticed the goals, I would say, on the whole. That was one of the first times I thought that was quite a complete performance. It was not the best I think we'll ever see of him, but I think it was quite a complete performance. I thought he was full of energy. I thought Mane was full of energy. I thought Firmino, while he still hasn't got his prime peak confidence back, you know, he showed lots and lots of quality and willing. And I think if you'd thrown fresh Salah into that mix, then I think we might have seen what we wanted on the counter. I think we could have sat deep and compact and then hit them with the proverbial, you know, red arrows, but with the right number of bodies. I think that would have been my move and earlier.
Keeper there gets praised by Rob Harriott. I think also, you know, he's practically perfect in every way and there's little he can do about the goal. There is stuff that Ozan Kabak could do about the goal, and it undermines what I think had been a genuinely excellent second half performance from Kabak. When Liverpool couldn't get a grip of the midfield, it felt like he was there to repel everything that came near him, right up until he's not necessarily where he needs to be. He's maybe not switched on from that corner. He is 20 years old. It's a very promising performance, but it's also clear where there needs to be improvement.
Yeah, I think we've all been really impressed with Kabak, while also recognising that he will have his downfalls and that he is still really young. really inexperienced and was brought in as a bit of a sort of a backup and something that we just needed at the time. Having said that, I do think he had a really good game. I think he's really getting used to the flow of how Liverpool play now. I think it's a shame that Phillips obviously has done something to his hamstring. Hopefully he won't be out for very long, because those two together were actually finding a strange bit of form and consistency, and they're the longest sort of partnership we've had this season in a weird old time when, you know, everyone that plays that position seems to just pass out or something happens to them. So it was a bit annoying that obviously, you know, he's not going to be in the right position all the time, and that is ultimately what happened for the goal. And he was just, you know, not in the position that he should have been in, and that's, you know, that is what it is, that happens. But that happens with Van Dijk, you know. You're never going to remove those mistakes and those things from any player. But ultimately I thought Kabak, he did have a good game, and I think that's the thing that's frustrating, is that we can never sort of, recently we've never been able to put it down to like an individual person's bad performance or, you know, an area of the pitch. It wasn't sort of just one area. It's just that I think after the goal goes in, and, you know, last season if a goal went in against us, we'd know that they'd sort of score. We all sort of had this feeling and certainty in ourselves that they would maybe score again, and they'd come back really quickly and stronger. And like Rob said already, that maybe plays into it that it was so late on in the game, but there was no sort of real pick me up. Yeah, we had a few chances, but we never sort of looked like we're going to score again and be able to come back into the match straight away. And I think that is what's really annoying.
Can I just say, I mean, and we're praising the keeper, but I think if Phillips is on the pitch, that gets headed away because he's brilliant in the air. Van Dijk's on the pitch, it gets headed away. And I wondered if, and I might be being harsher because I'm prone to this criticism of goalkeepers, if the keeper couldn't have come for that and absolutely emptied it. I just think he's that, you know, unless you've got a specialist in the air, your keeper's your tallest presence in the box any one time. And I just think he should have come for it. I don't know. But it's hard, maybe harsh, but that was my gut feeling.
We find ourselves, Ian, having dropped two. It feels like dropping 2 points given where the game was, how the game went, despite the fact that Leeds do deserve enormous credit. They play ever so well in that second half, and they play ever so well on the front foot as well. They do deserve credit for that. That said, it's 2 points dropped, and if we allow ourselves a few minutes of thinking that top four is a thing, then it's a real shame, because it would have ended a very nice little run of games for Liverpool. This is something which they do need to reflect on a little bit, really, because these opportunities, they're not going to keep coming, are they?
No, and I was a little bit resigned last night, leaning to the fact that I don't think we will get top four, and I know that may come across as a little bit negative. I talked myself into it on the back of the West Ham Newcastle game, because I thought we'd go to Leeds and I thought we'd win, but then you don't factor in all the kind of shitstorm that kind of sits around the game last night. And as we said before, that may have had an impact. But Chelsea don't look like they've got many slips in them. I know they had that mad game against West Brom, but apart from that, they look really good defensively. You don't see many teams putting them to the sword, to be honest. And yes, West Ham might fall away. I think they probably will. Leicester's obviously in the equation as well. So there's a couple of places there, but I just don't know whether this Liverpool team's got enough about it to go on a better run than what we've seen. And I know recently they put the three games together and that sneaked up on me a little bit, if I'm honest. But I just don't know whether we've got the ability to suddenly put four or five. And I think it needs to be that now. What have we got? We've got seven left, have we? Is it six or seven left? Six. So six left, and they're probably going to have to win five, maybe even six of those games. And I just don't know whether, you know, you come back to that clinicalness that we talked about before. To win football matches, you've got to show more clinical skills at the other end of the pitch than what we've been able to do recently. And, you know, you keep missing chances. And I just don't know whether I see them putting a run together that's going to get them over the line, to be honest. And that's, you know, it's hard to say that, because we've looked at this Liverpool team over the last 2 or 3 years and they've not let us down very often. It's fair to say. But I think they might have just given themselves a little bit too much to do now.
They play Leeds last night, Rob. Leeds are 10th. The only other team they've got to play left in the top 10. Even the top 12 is Manchester United. Everybody else is 13th and down. One of the problems with that, though, is that so far this season, in the, I think it's 11 games they've played against 13th and down, they've only won three of them. And that is, you know, we can talk therefore and say that the fixtures are going to fall quite nicely for Liverpool, with Palace, Southampton, Newcastle all at home, Burnley and West Bromwich Albion away. But it is true to say, plus Manchester United, it is true to say that the very reason why Liverpool find themselves in the position that they're in this season is that those are the games that they've been failing to take maximum points from, and that's what's punishing them.
Well, there's no arguing with that, but I'm not necessarily convinced that it will be thus in this run-in. I mean, if I wasn't a Liverpool fan, and like Ian says, it's been such a miserable season, if we're honest, that we don't think we deserve good things anymore. So I don't think, and even notwithstanding the furore we're going to talk about, we don't see ourselves as finishing top four, because that would actually feel quite pleasing at the end of the season in normal circumstances. Liverpool coming into the game last night were very much bookies odds on favourite to finish top four. In fact, if you go by the odds, they probably were favourites for third, I'm going to say, because Leicester, we would have gone within a point of Leicester. And we do have the easiest run in, albeit, you know, one of those games we didn't win last night. Had we won last night, I would have said we're an absolute shoo-in for fourth. Having said that, I still think our position is slightly false, because we've played harder games than a lot of those teams around us. Chelsea do look good, like Ian said, but then you go, I think they've only won three of the last seven or eight in the Premier League. It's not great. And they've got a hard run in. They've got some big teams to play. They've got to play West Ham. They've got to play Leicester and Arsenal, and they've got to play Manchester City. We, of that ilk, have only got to play Man United. Now, of course, Neil has pointed out that, we have lived in a parallel universe this season whereby we are shit against the shit and quite good against the good. So arguably, we would like to have played only top six teams in the run-in, except that's not reality. You're still going to back yourself each time against a lesser light. So I'm a lot more pessimistic than I was before kick-off, but I'm not ruling us out by any stretch of the imagination.
Not with the runners out there. Okay, we will come back round to this conversation around Liverpool and the football matches they have to play very, very soon indeed. But obviously the key thing, and where I just want to bring us back into, is the backdrop to all of the football conversations at the moment. Harriet, I think there's something important which I think needs to be sort of said and reiterated as much as humanly possible in the conversation, which is that I don't think that football supporters in general, although football supporters often have a way of disappointing me, are knocking round and are of the view that UEFA and the Premier League are inherently good, or that football as it is now is the way football should always be, although I do think that that vibe does exist a little bit, because ultimately, certainly in this country, people are very traditionalist and are suspicious of any change. But part of why people are suspicious of any change is when a case is made for change. And in this instance, this still just remains to me, you know, the core of this conversation remains one that is about values. And I think it's important that legacy fans don't allow themselves to be painted as endlessly traditionalist, that you can embrace change, but the values, the why for that change, are what matters.
Yeah, I think that's true. We can embrace change, but at the moment we don't have any sort of reason behind why this change to that extent is really coming. And I think also it's the certainty of the outcome is what is really bothering me about the whole thing. The fact that it would just be this set thing where no one can go up, no one can go down, and it's just there's no consequences for performing badly. I mean, that is what makes being a football fan so fun. You have all the highest of highs, but you also have lowest of lows, and that's just reality. And I think in any scenario in life, if you're guaranteed an outcome, it just makes things very, very boring. And none of us want that as fans. You know, we watch it. That's why we're invested when Leicester play Everton, for example. That's why we, you know, care what's going on with West Ham. It's why, you know, it's what makes football what it is. And it's frustrating that a lot of the sort of conversations being around younger fans, I mean, I fall just into that 18 to 24 category that they're talking about, and saying that you know, they're the fans of the future, and they all just want to see the big stars, and they don't really care about football as it is now. And that's just untrue. I mean, none of the people that I sort of watch football with around my age are just looking to see big stars play. We genuinely love the game, and we want the best for the game, but this is just not, you know, the best thing for the game, and that's just becoming increasingly clear.
It's on the line that Perez was eager to push last night around younger supporters, Ian. I do think that there is aspects where the thing I've said and thought for a while, and it was sort of thrown into focus before we played Real Madrid, was that I can't think of another sport, and maybe I'm wrong and someone will tell me, but where Ramos and Salah don't share a pitch together they didn't full stop because of injury, but certainly don't have the opportunity to share a pitch, share a sporting occasion together for 4 years after what happens in that Kiev final. other sports do find their way through to frame that entertainment, and it's important here to think about eyeballs and think about entertainment as much as to think about sort of the other bits and pieces. But that conversation, while valid, this is no way to have it. And I think that that's what's the difficult part here. And the basis on which, the parameter on which to have it is, how do we make football better for as many people as possible? And not to have it on the basis of, how do we ensure we're all boxed off, lads? And right now, the vibe of how do we ensure we're all boxed off, lads, is coming through a lot stronger than how do we make sure football is better.
100%, Neil. And that's why, for me, you know, you just feel a little bit empty and sad and frustrated, to be honest, because you do feel like, and this is the case, you know, the fans just haven't been considered in any of this. I just don't see how anyone's given a second thought to the fans. And, you know, you'd like to think in this season of all seasons, that point would have landed with people. It would have been rammed home. And, you know, Personally, I've found it difficult to engage at times with the football because of the type of season we've had, because of the, you know, the lack of being able to go to game, because of the VAR stuff. You're already a little bit on your knees with it. And then this is just like, it feels like the final fucking punch in the gut, to be honest with you. And it's hard to, as I said before, whatever happens from here on in, lots of people won't forget this. They won't forget it. And even if it is some kind of weird power play, we don't know yet. But it feels like it's gone a little bit too far for that now, when you've got people resigning from certain posts. So I don't know whether it is a power play. It genuinely feels like this has got a little bit more kind of force behind it. And listen, football has to evolve. And we know within football, it's full of hypocrites. So you'll have people say, well, what about Sky? What about UEFA? What about the FA? That doesn't change. We know there needs to be a reform, and the FA probably hasn't been fit for purpose, and there's issues with FIFA, and there's issues with UEFA. Absolutely, we know that. But I can only talk about it as a fan, and it feels like it's slipping away a little bit, and that's what upsets me. And, you know, Harry, it's right. You know, you're in football for, Neil, you said it the other day, jeopardy. If you take that away, what are you left with? You're left with meaningless games. The games have to matter. They absolutely have to matter. So whether I think Liverpool can get top four or not, it's not decided. That's my opinion. It might change next week, because guess what? That's what fans do. You know, after Newcastle v West Ham, I'm doing the team talk, and Lizzie's putting it in the comments that Newcastle took a 2-0 lead. I'm fucking right down the stairs. I can't wait to watch the second half, because it means something. That's the point of it. It means something. And all of a sudden, Liverpool have got a chance. They've got a chance to be in the big cup next season. That's what we're in for. Those moments. You want to feel something. And football gives you that. And what these proposals do, it takes away that feeling that's gone. Because what you're left with, and this is the tip of the iceberg, by the way. So people say, well, do you plan to stay in the Premier League? Do they? Do we know that for sure? Because there's every chance that the Premier League won't want them, and this could just be the start of something. And once you're on that slippery slope, you don't know where you're going to end up, because all of a sudden you're playing games in Shanghai and all over the world. And what makes Liverpool special? The heartbeat's gone. No, I'm just reading, I've just finished reading Dan Feinsell's book, Local. Go and have a read of that. That talks about the values. That talks about the social values of this football club. That talks about how men like Shankly, Paisley, Fagan, they built the foundations up. And some people might go, well, that's the history. Forget about that. No, it's important. It's important, because that's what this football club is built on. You can't just take that away. And as it's been said on countless other shows by different people, it feels like that's what these owners are trying to do. They've reaped the benefits of Liverpool Football Club being built on certain things, and now they're trying to take that away. It doesn't fucking feel right, and I won't have it that, yes, the game evolves. I remember when Sky came in, and, you know, people will argue about that. We couldn't even afford Sky when it first came in. It was 2 or 3 years before we got it. So, yeah, sometimes it does evolve, and you maybe don't like how it looks or how it feels. But I think even in that instance, you could see positives to it. The game progresses, analysis gets better, coverage gets better. You can see the positives. I'm struggling to see any positives in this, and that's what's hurting the most, to be honest.
As Ian there mentions the history, one of the aspects of Liverpool's history, Rob, that I think we should all be rightly proudest of is that Liverpool is a European club and is a European giant. And there is obvious value in European giants playing each other a bit more often. I think that, you know, it's mad to think throughout all of Liverpool's history, when we talk about Liverpool being a European giant, Bayern Munich and Liverpool have only met 9 times. Bayern Munich are the European giants. There's some Bayern Munich sides I wish I'd seen play some Liverpool sides. You know, and you can pull these moments right the way through football history, and you can point at little bits and pieces and say that stuff can't just be left to be an accident. But that's why the strange thing about this, and why I think this is so difficult, is there's so many disparate wants and needs in amongst it all, that it's really difficult to find what feels like an ideal path for European football as a whole. And within that as well, we're still a long way away from an ideal path for English football as a whole. You know, Championship clubs still run a 107% wages to turnover ratio. You know, there's all these things feel like they're these series of cack-handed compromises to satisfy the wrong people at the wrong time, when ultimately what supporters want, I think, is fantastic journeys with great footballers.
Yeah, I'm struggling to firm my own view up on the whole thing. There's certain things I naturally rankle. You feel things like closed shops feels very, very, a bit of a paradigm shift from what we've been used to. I know other sports, but then again, I'm prepared to accept that other sports have made it work with closed shops to a degree. I'm prepared to change my mind almost every other day, but there's just so much more information, I think, broadly I require. I think what there's a huge question of degree in these things. It's perfectly reasonable to say, as you've just intimated, Neil, that it's, why is it a bad thing that Liverpool might play Barcelona or Bayern Munich every year? Why shouldn't we look forward to our grand Clásico with Real Madrid? We do it Man United with Everton. Why is a world game, a world club game, which is what this is moving in the direction of, why is that inherently a bad thing? I'm thinking 2050, maybe I'm still alive, maybe I'm just hanging in there. I was making a joke. Maybe I'm on the supersonic flight and I get to Tokyo in an hour and a half, for Tokyo away. You know, I'm having sushi and sake on the concourse. And it's, you know, it's a different game. It's an evolving, I know. The European Super League thing has been talked about since I was a kid. And the problem with it always was the way it was moved towards. Not that it was inherently a bad thing, because I don't think it's a bad thing to want to see Liverpool play the best several times a season and be in a league with them. The problem was always cited was, what is the knock-on effect to the domestic league? Because there wouldn't be room for it. What nobody conceived of then is that within 20 years, we'd have put the League Cup and the FA Cup all but in the bin anyway. So we've sort of made room for it. We've pre-made room for this. The Champions League was, as Klopp has said, is a kind of European Super League. So the shock horror of this is, to a degree, escapes me to a degree. I mean, at the end of the day, most of the things we're talking about supplanting UEFA's hegemony over European football with the new institutions. And it happens to be that the new institutions is made of a series of shareholders of the most powerful. It's one set of power brokers versus another set of power brokers. Let's put it this way. I'm not sure exactly how I feel about this. I don't quite see this the way a lot of my fellow fans, and the way I think Harriet and Ian have expressed it, as a betrayal of our roots, of who we are, what have you. Because those things exist independently, I think, of a lot of what goes on at the business side of things. If it all happens, and once we've all realised we can't do anything about it, and the fixtures are announced for next season, and we're in the Premier League still, which I still think we will, because they can't live without the big clubs. And then there's the fixtures for the new European thing. I'm going, fucking hell, I'm looking for when date the derby is. I'm looking for what date we play Barca at Anfield is. I'm getting up for this again, right? And there is jeopardy, because we might not finish, because who knows where we're going to finish in a league of 20 bloody European great teams. Of course there's jeopardy. Of course there's jeopardy in the Premier League. The Premier League, the top division, existed without...
But there's more European meaningless games.
What would you think happened?
There's more meaningless games.
But Neil, what happened before we had European football from 1965 onwards in England?
Yeah.
There was only a title to be won and relegation.
But Rob, this is back to my point of, but it doesn't make football better. You saying, well, therefore there were some meaningless games in 1964, doesn't make me go, well, that sounds fucking great, let's go for 2022.
I agree. Well, this is why I'm not convinced. I'm just saying, but more meaningless doesn't mean it's empty. So we're moving from, there could be more meaningless games, you know, I can really see that too. This is an empty, vapid idea. But then you go, well, hang on, I'll tell you what, the Champions League's, well, the equivalent, the new European competition sounds like it has many meaningful games, really meaningful games, week in, week out against giants. So I'm going, well, it's a bit of a yin and yang. And I don't think there's less meaningful games for Leicester City, Wolves, Everton, who are there. Okay, they're going for the places, but it used to be that, okay, you're in second place, but you've already won the League Cup, so your UEFA place doesn't mind, so it goes to the next one. This is not alien to football's culture, these kind of compromises, and does this mean something to someone or not to someone else?
It's not alien to football's culture, Rob, but it seems strange to me to make a series of decisions that literally makes it worse solely to offer some guaranteed money to people who...
Well, yeah.
And that's the problem here, in that, you know, it's not like we're choosing to make it worse because there's far greater solidarity with Oldham Athletic, which I think people could at least understand a moral argument for. We're choosing to make it worse because I do think it would make domestic football worse. And there's every chance, by the way, that, you know, in your group of 10, as it's written down, it's two groups of 10, and you lose the first three, and realistically you're not going to be able to get it back, and you're bobbing along, and you're going to come sixth in the other thing because of the way in which it's just going. So there's every chance that very, very quickly seasons are just left with effectively watching some really, really good footballers, don't get me wrong, but with no life to them. And you love the life of football.
You
literally host our overview show, which talks about any number of permutations as to who's going to win this game and who's going to win that game, and you never know which way this can go. And you love run your program off the back of our draw last night and had a look at everyone else's fixtures. You've done all the stuff that adds meaning to it, and that to me is what's difficult. You know, the idea of basically going, what we're going to do is we're going to ensure more rich fellas get absolutely boxed off, and it's going to mean less than it does right now. At least give me a trade-off where it at least means more than it does.
Look, I agree with you. Hang on. Just come back a little quickly, and then I'll shut up now, Ian. Rich fellas again boxed off left, right, and centre here, right?
Yes, and they are in the current Premier League set status, yeah, et cetera, et cetera.
They just are. And I agree with, I don't disagree with you, let's put it this way, about there's a conversation to be put. How, you know, if we could start again, and we want to change, we want to evolve into a more fun or different type of product, how would we do it to make sure there was more meaningful matches? Moreover, I've got all kinds of big ideas if they want to knock on my door about this. Fuck me. And I think there seems, it just doesn't seem very imaginative. And
no,
it would have been
the shit. That's what pisses me off.
It would have been nice. I tell you what, I don't support what they're doing, but I've done a better job of selling what they're doing than I think I've heard them do so far. I'm thinking, God, boys, I'm for hire. I don't agree with you, but I can at least I sort of glean what you're trying to push here. But they're making a very, very bad effort of it, and they could have left a few doors open for negotiation and killed a few of the arguments off early doors. But we are where we are.
Yeah. I think you are left with a scenario, Rob, where there'll just be loads and loads of exhibition matches that just don't mean anything. And when you think about the footballers, these are elite athletes.
Why will they be there? Explain it. Talk me through it, though, because I'm being stupid.
Well, last night's game, for instance, if Liverpool are already guaranteed European qualification, what does last night's game mean?
For Liverpool?
Yeah. In 12 months' time, if Liverpool...
If they're not going for the title, not very much. But well, what did it mean?
I don't want that.
What did it mean for Leeds last night? Nothing. Nothing for Leeds last night in that game. But yet they were barnstorming second half. They were fucking up for it, and their fans went into their outdoor pubs yesterday afterwards and had a mild little drink to that, enjoyed it, and talked about it.
I think you've got footballers, Rob, as well, who absolutely they need that thrill, they need that adrenaline rush. And I think all of a sudden, if you're playing games that have got very little riding on them, and yes, of course, you will have times where there's very little for certain teams, that's always been the way, but you're going to end up with more of that. And I don't think games where it means less. And I think if you ask the footballers, you ask the managers, they want to pit themselves against the very best to get that. But as Neil alluded to, what makes those games special for me is that they don't happen all the time. They happen now and again. And that's why I get excited about a Barcelona or a Real Madrid, because I don't see it all the time. I think it's suddenly a difference. It feels different to me if you're suddenly having that game on a regular basis. And we know the manager doesn't want it because he put a statement out 2 years ago saying, I don't want to play Real Madrid every week for 10 years. And I don't understand why he'd say that. And
some
I
just do, think, though.
Yeah, well, I think some do. And you know, that I suppose that's football. It will be about opinions. But I think there's more people in the camp of, I don't want to see that all the time, than is, to be honest. But
Julio got lambasted for saying that aiming for fourth. I know that they meant because that showed a lack of ambition, that the getting fourth and qualifying for the Champions League by a fourth was meaningless. There was a time where we thought, wow, aiming for a top four rather than a trophy. You know, Arsenal celebrating the fourth place, they scored the fourth place trophy. Often a lot of football's narrative has gone, that's shite. Oh. That's not meaningful. Those aren't meaningful games. That's just a technical money-making thing to get you into the money-making cup. I mean,
I'll pass the final word on it to Harry. The be a converse argument, which is, it's all right, Rob, don't worry, you're absolutely fine. There'll be a converse argument, which is that part of what this is meant to do with, for instance, the 55% cap in terms of salaries and transfer fees, part of what it's meant to do is restrict spending of the very, very top sides. So there would be, I think, the impression that maybe, just maybe, you would have more seasons where there was four or five sides at the top of the domestic league until pretty close to the bitter end in there. It's just that to me is, if I say it's pie in the sky thinking, I'm being a little bit harsh. But there's just no evidence to sort of see that point through until the bitter end. There's no evidence to sort of go, no, that'll definitely be the case. That'll definitely be how it works out. And also within that, that doesn't take into account the damage that you've just done to Leicester, to Everton, to West Ham, who I hold no candle for. But if we can't beat Everton by fair means, you know, we're not in the business of being Liverpool Football Club anymore.
Yeah, but there's just every chance. Like you said, it's a remote possibility that we're still a lot to play for in the last month of the season. But there's also every chance that after 2-3 months of the season, it's completely dead for a lot of teams. And then every single game you watch after that basically becomes like a friendly or like a middle of the league match that no one really wants to watch, but you just kind of watch it because your team's playing or, you know, you're remotely interested in it. But the whole sense of, I mean, yeah, I sort of agree with Ian on this. The whole reason you want to watch these games is because there's still a stake on it and there's still something riding on it. And if that is gone for the last 5 months, possibly 4 months, 3 months, 2 months of the season, then what are you watching for? You know, obviously we enjoy watching football and the basics of football, but you watch it because there's something more and there's consequences of what's happening and there's something to look forward to next season. And that's why, like I said earlier, that's why it's a nice thing to think there's a remote possibility. I mean, it's not a nice thing, but that West Ham could be playing against Barcelona next season. It's mad. And if you take all of that out of it, then there's just nothing. There's just no sort of enjoyment left. And like you said, for those teams that wouldn't be involved, like the Everton, like Leicester, yeah, okay, we're not necessarily sort of putting their interests first, but we still have to think about how it would impact them and how it would impact the rest of the domestic league. And I think it would be completely naive to say, you know, that we'd still enjoy every match as much as we do now with absolutely nothing riding on it. I think that's naive, and I don't think that's completely realistic, to be honest.
Thank you very much indeed, Harriet Pryor, Ian Ryan and Rob Gutman, for getting into this one. There will be more about this. There'll be more about this absolutely everywhere. Do just watch and wonder who is saying what, where, when and why. And do watch people who are currently trying to turn this into something that they can find their way to leverage an opportunity from. You're getting to see a lot of that conduct at this stage of proceedings, and it's something I would very much keep my eye on from a Liverpool point of view. But Liverpool are part of what's opened the door to that sort of thing, and Liverpool Football Club at the very highest level, and by that I obviously mean the ownership, need to have a good long think about how they've gone about their business, I would argue, in amongst all of this, because it doesn't seem to be something that anybody wanted to see, both in terms of outcome and in terms of approach. It's been a pleasure right the way through this show. It's a shame that Liverpool didn't get the result against Leeds United. There's lots of fantastic stuff on the Anfield Wrap. None of our hands are clean, as Rob Gutman says. I would like you very much to subscribe £10 a month to the Anfield Wrap to enjoy all of our excellent video, all of our excellent audio about this tremendous football club that we all love very much indeed. And if everyone could just remember that bit, it would make a massive difference.
Sports Social Podcast Network.